Hey everyone, I'm Rose McKenzie, and I was the coordinator for the Massachusetts Women's Health Coalition. I'm here on behalf of the whole coalition. The executive members are listed there, but I've been chosen because I was the coordinator for the whole coalition, but I speak on behalf of a lot of organizations. My disclosure, I have no relationships to disclose. But today I want to go over sort of the process of the formation of the Massachusetts Women's Health Coalition, what it was that prompted us to think that it was necessary, and how we came together in the beginning, and then the process of us realizing that we needed a more formal coalition with some priority areas, some governance documents, and how we went about doing that. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of our successes and the work that we've done, and then the takeaways that I think would be useful for others. I'm trying, and hopefully will succeed, to weave together both sort of a content-based information as well as the logistics and process, because I think that especially in our case, and for a lot of people, they're really linked. So we started as sort of four organizations that came together because health reform was happening in Massachusetts, and we thought we might want to talk about it. Health reform, as I'm sure you guys have been told before today and will be again, health reform was first in Massachusetts. We had our own, and because Massachusetts is really pro-health community, and it's a fairly pro-choice community, women's health didn't really suffer in the implementation of our own state-based reform. And when national reform started to come through, we realized that we might want to check that out, that we might lose some of the places that we are, and we might also have opportunities to make some sort of creative, proactive change. But it wasn't information or really expertise that any of us had in our own organizations. It wasn't central to anybody's work portfolio, and so it wasn't necessarily something that one of these organizations would take on by ourselves, which is really what brought us together. We realized that as a women's health community, we needed to join up our expertise to look at this issue. And what's important is we began as a group of organizations that had worked together before. So the four original organizations that I'll talk about in a second, we had existing relationships with one another, which allowed us to really grow organically. The very first meeting was just the four of us saying, do you think we might want to talk about whether anybody's doing something around health reform and maybe share some information? And that was how this started, was just that sort of information sharing. I know you do this sort of stuff, and so I'm going to check in with you. And we realized really quickly from the first meeting that there was a lot of informational overlap. There was a lot of expertise overlap that could really allow us to do something, and that none of us really knew exactly what we were doing. And so the only way we would be effective in making change was really to come together. We also received some shared funding as we were beginning these conversations, and I think that that was incredibly important for us. The four organizations, two of them received a grant together. And that was important, not just because we had funding to do this, but because we had funding that forced us together to do it. And part of the reason it was shared funding was because neither of the skills or expertise on staff at either of these organizations were exactly what the funder wanted. They wanted a combination of it. The four organizations, IVIS Reproductive Health is a research-based organization. NARAL Pro-Choice Massachusetts is a grassroots and political-based organization. Massachusetts Department of Public Health, the Family Planning Program, they're part of the Department of Public Health, and so they're a government-based organization. They also work directly with a lot of the family planning providers. So they have both the perspective of on-the-ground people as well as the perspective of a public health proactive preventative program. And then the Connor Center for Women's Health and Gender Biology is part of the Brigham and Women's Hospital, and they tend to work on a national basis. The other important addition that they brought is they work on a broader women's health basis. So IBIS, NARAL, and DPH tended to work together a lot on choice-related, reproductive health-related information. So it was very important for us to sort of broaden the view that we were looking at these issues with, and make sure that we had someone who was looking at women's health more broadly, not just from a sort of family planning reproductive health perspective, but from a broader lifespan model. And because of the overlap of research, policy, politics, and sort of on-the-ground government, we started to look at health reform from a broader perspective and say, is there something proactive that we can do? Is there something around the changes that have to be made that we can come together and either just share information so that we know what's happening? Can we join together and say, this is something that the women's health movement needs out of these changes? And as we started to do that, we realized, A, that we were overlapping some work, so we stopped doing that and made sure that we were talking about what we were all doing and coordinating on it, but also realizing that there were some issues that were popping up around, first it was changes in eligibility for Medicaid services, and then in the cost containment law that was passed in 2011, that we could come together and as a community say, there are specific things that the women's health community needs out of these. And as we started to do that, we realized that these four original organizations were not enough. And so we started adding the expertise that we felt like we didn't have. We added providers like Planned Parenthood and independent providers. We added family planning folks who were on the ground. We added the abortion funds who speak specifically to women who don't have enough money to pay for their own abortion, because all of those perspectives and voices were really important. And about a year into this process of us chatting and coming together and doing sign-on letters and strategizing together, we realized we might want to kind of formalize this, that it was working as conversations, but in order to move forward, we needed some shared priorities, we needed some shared understanding of what we were doing in these meetings, what we wanted to accomplish. We also really wanted to think through who was at the table and was it the right people, since it had really grown organically by taking people whose expertise we wanted, and we hadn't really strategized around, is this the right table of people to be talking about these issues? So we went after funding, which is really important, and it's the second time I'm mentioning it, but we went after funding to specifically support us in doing this work, and we decided that it should sit with one organization. Instead of it being shared between IBIS and NARAL, which was very important in the beginning of this process to bring us together, we thought that there needed to be one point person who both it was their responsibility to run this forward, and then it was also sort of their baby, their ownership of this. And so we had it sit with NARAL, and we had it sit with NARAL in order to pay for me to be the actual coordinator of this coalition with some of my time. And through that funding to support me in doing this, we had conversations around what do we want this to look like? And I got to run those conversations and say, all right, what is this coalition? What are we trying to do with it? Who should be sitting on it? And in what way do we want people sitting? And we came to the decision of an executive committee because we felt that the four original organizations still had a little bit more. It was our baby, and we didn't want to give it up yet. And so the four organizations that started it became an executive committee that would make final decisions about where we're going, final decisions about who should be on, who shouldn't be on the coalition, and then that we would set it up in working groups. And so based on the work that we wanted to do, each time we sort of decided on what work we should be working on, that group would come together based on the people who wanted to put resources into that. So it would be a full coalition, an executive committee making decisions, and then working groups pushing the work forward. We also talked through who needed to be at the table. We realized that because it formed organically, it formed with the people who were used to working with each other, and we didn't necessarily have a very broad women's health community at the table. It was still very repro-focused. So we added folks from the Department of Health and Human Services from the Massachusetts and the Northeast region. We added folks in the domestic violence and the sexual assault worlds because that was an important voice that wasn't there. We added folks from the LGBT communities, because that was an important voice that wasn't there. And we also had, we had brainstorming sessions with the full coalition about why they came to these meetings and what they wanted to see out of it. And from that, we pulled four priority areas for what we wanted to be working on. The first was basically the reason that we got together. We wanted to ensure most of the healthcare and delivery system changes that were happening, particularly Affordable Care Act implementation in Massachusetts and then Chapter 224, which is cost containment law. We wanted to protect and improve women's access to critical health services in those reforms. That's really why we started talking. It was our main goal the whole time, and so it was our first and most important priority area. But the other things came out of the conversations that we had been having, both in brainstorming sessions and in what we wanted to do with the coalition. We felt that young women and teens' access to confidential services was being threatened by a lot of these changes, and we wanted to make sure there was a group specifically looking at that. Data collection and data reporting on a whole host of specific data has been a historical problem in Massachusetts, and we wanted to make sure that we were looking at that from a women's health perspective. And then uninsurance still remains a problem in Massachusetts, although nowhere near the problem in other states. And so we wanted to make sure that we were looking at that from a sex-specific point of view, not just why is there an insurance, but making sure that someone's thinking about why are women particularly uninsured. And so we have some results. We have a functioning coalition today. And in terms of the coalition building that we did, we have a 14-organization or 35-individual member coalition that's not only active, but it is active since I have stepped down as a coordinator and passed it on, which I think is very important that it it's not just a one-person organization, a one-person thing that made this happen, but it lasted beyond me. And we have quarterly full coalition meetings, a very active Google group that trades information between meetings. And that can be anything from, here's something happening that we think the women's health community might care about, to here's something that my organization is doing that I need help with. So it became this place for people to ask for assistance in a way that we didn't have before in the full women's health community. We have shared priority issues for coalition members. So if any of you work with other organizations, you know that that's a pretty big deal, that we managed to get about 14 organizations to come together and say, yes, these are four things that we care about. And we right now have two working groups with regular meetings. There's a youth access and confidential services group that's working on how do we make sure that youth can have the access to confidential services they need through changes in cost containment, through changes in health reform, any kind of delivery system change we're looking at. And then there's a group that's looking at the preventative health services, how they're implemented in Massachusetts, and making sure that women's health is included in those in the right ways. And then in the content side of things, we've had some really incredible successes. The first one was the very first thing that we came together as a community and said, we want to make a change. It was around presumptive eligibility for Medicaid. So pregnant women in Massachusetts a year ago would be presumptively eligible only for an insurance that paid for prenatal care, didn't pay for anything else. And we said, we sort of realized as we were looking at health reform that they had to change eligibility anyway. So we came together as a community and said, if you're changing eligibility, you have to change it in a way where pregnant women are presumptively eligible for the full range of insurance coverage. And that happened. And pregnant women now in Massachusetts, if they're low income, immediately eligible for full MassHealth that covers everything, including abortion, in their insurance. Another really incredible success we had, the cost containment law that passed in 2011, it included in two places requirements for OB-GYN and family planning services. The first is in health resource planning, which if we hadn't come together as a community, I don't know if we ever would have thought of that as a place where we needed to advocate. But health resource planning is really important, as I hope many of you know. And it's a really great place to sort of put forward women's health because it's not as controversial as many things that we're trying to do, and it's saying that we have to think about women when we're planning for healthcare. The other place that it's required is when we're creating accountable care organizations, which are going to be new organizations in Massachusetts set up to have a whole host of services. And in this law, it's going to require that OB-GYN and family planning services are required. Both of those are things that the coalition, that specific members of the coalition took on and used the coalition behind them to advocate for. Two sort of more ongoing things. The Department of Insurance is going through a whole process based on some of these reforms to think about the explanation of benefits process. And as part of that, it really affects confidentiality of services for dependents on insurance. And so the coalition has come together and written some really amazing comments with some draft language on how you would maintain confidentiality through this process. We've also been consistently monitoring what surveys are done in Massachusetts and whether they include women's health information. And based on some of the members of the coalition advocating, we saved the annual health insurance survey that happens in Massachusetts that they were thinking of taking away and is going to happen again next year. So the takeaways that I think are important for other people in other states, I've said this a couple of times, shared and ongoing funding was vital to what we were doing. The shared funding that we got to begin this coalition is really what brought us together, not just as a few organizations, but as organizations that were going to make one goal and go for it together. And the ongoing funding, both of us in the beginning stages and then of a coordinator position, as one position and as someone with ownership over formalizing a coalition, was the only way that we were actually going to create a formalized coalition. We can't, as many of you know if you're in any kind of public health or nonprofit association, we can't do these things without resources, and to expect our staff to continue to do more and more without any resources is a problem. And so the funding that allowed us to say, okay, we are going to prioritize this work and we're going to actually put the resources into it was really important. Beginning with organizations that were used to working with each other is, I think, what allowed us to be successful. If we had stayed only within those organizations, we wouldn't have been successful. But having that as a beginning, having a working relationship among the organizations, which allowed us to sort of be shaky on our feet in the beginning without feeling like we were going to be judged by other organizations, was important. And it allowed us to know kind of what other organizations could bring to the table. For that beginning time period where we weren't sure exactly what we were doing or why. So to start with something that grew organically and then to realize that there's a point where you say, okay, now we need other organizations that we're not used to working with. Now we need to think about who's not at the table. That was an important growth period for us. Having a staff person with ownership was also vital. I think in coalitions especially, you can get to the place where there's a few different organizations, there's a few different staff people at them, and they all kind of think somebody else is going to do this thing. And to have me be the person where it was my job, and if it didn't happen, it was my fault, was very important. Not in the sense that anybody told me it was my fault that things weren't happening, but because if there was a whole host of things that we wanted to do, it was me either doing them or hounding other people to say, you need to do this and you need to do it now, which meant that things move forward in a way that in often coalitions they don't. And then the diversity of our organizations was incredibly important, both because having a lot of expertise, having me as an attorney, having researchers at the table, having government people who understood what was happening behind doors, having people on the ground in various ways that understood what women we were trying to help were really facing was very important. Also, the diversity of what our organizations cared about was important. In my work, and I think a lot of people are used to working with organizations within their own movement. So I'm used to working with just choice organizations, and all we care about is, are people getting abortions and contraception the way that we want them to? And to work with both broader women's health focused people, but then also domestic violence people, sexual assault people, LGBT people, and say, okay, I understand now how my work is affecting your populations and how we can come together and really do something that will help a broad range of people is very important. In terms of the content takeaways, health reform and health changes, I think, are incredibly important to a lot of advocacy that's happening right now, and it's a great opportunity for coalition building. The health changes that are happening are so new that they're not necessarily in anyone's wheelhouse right now. There's no specific organization in a lot of advocacy movements that's prepared to take these on. And so that's scary in a lot of ways, but it's also a really fantastic opportunity to say, okay, now we're going to come together to do this. In Massachusetts, we had this opportunity to do something creative and to expand access to women's health. In other states, that may not be the case. In other states, it may be more of an opportunity, if you want to look at it that way, to protect women's health. But it's either way, health reform and the health reform changes and the systems changes that are going to come, they're an interesting place for us to start working from a women's health perspective, because they're new, they're different, and if we can get in there, we can make changes that other people aren't necessarily seeing. And so it can go either way. It can be a creative expansion of what we already have, or it can be a way to protect women in states that aren't very protective of them. So thank you very much. And I'm happy to answer questions if anybody has them. Or not. Thank you.
Thank you.